Marcello, the ROI guy.
This is April Morley. I'm co-founder of Genius Drive and the Enterprise Value Collective.
And welcome to the Value Coffee Talk podcast.
This podcast is a service of the Enterprise Value Collective, a community for business value-focused leaders and practitioners, and is sponsored by our value consultancy, Genius Drive.
And our mission is to help you accelerate and optimize value articulation in each of your customer engagements and throughout the customer lifecycle. And we're very happy to announce our guest today, Laura Fay. Welcome, Laura. Hi.
Hi, great to be here.
Laura is the managing principal for the as-a-service growth consultancy, L. Fay Associates. Many of you know Laura from her work at the Technology and Services Industry Association as vice president and managing director, research and advisory, and from her book, Digital Hesitation. That was co-authored with her and one of her TSIA research colleagues. And in that book, she makes the case for effective value management and its role in launching and growing successful recurring revenue businesses. And it's this focus on value that we're here to explore today. So, Laura, my first question is, where do you think product leaders are struggling the most with today?
Great question, Thomas. Product leaders traditionally have been all about creating value propositions, right? And a proposition, in a way, is a promise. The promise in when we come into recurring revenue models, which just about everything is these days, is the customer has to realize some value from what they've mm-hmm. purchased, right? They've got to realize the business outcome. They've got to realize that promise. And, you know, what we see through data and through practices is that product management isn't always the product management in the technology space, certainly, have been traditionally think about putting a product out there and then leaving it maybe to customer success to help customers realize value, as opposed to kind of really taking the perspective of how do I build that into the offering from the get-go to deliver on a whole experience, right? And so that is sort of it's a shift that product managers kind of need to make in their mindset. And I think part of the challenge, there's many different challenges. One is that the organizational structures aren't always effective. We're still actually operating on some pretty sort of make, sell, ship type organizational structures mm-hmm. and models. Whereas now we're in these recurring revenue models, many companies, particularly some of the larger ones, still have separate service organizations, still think about building technology and then adding on a bunch of services afterwards. The product teams aren't necessarily thinking about that. And also the leaving it to marketing to promote the value and sales to sort of articulate the value to any given customer, but not always in a very kind of consistent way. So the gap really gets formed when the customer expectation of the offering, which has been created by marketing and sales, their favorite salespeople or what have you, where that expectation is actually quite different from what the actual technology or the product that they receive, right? Mm-hmm. The example I have in the book is if I'm remodeling my house, right? I envision this house with all these, beautifully painted two-story, two-car garage, bow windows, blah, 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 right? And everything looks lovely. And then the product equivalent very often is a pile of bricks and framing and siding and all of those things, but it's not kind of put together in a holistic way. So you've got that gap. So how do you actually fill that gap? So that's ultimately what I describe as the gap, which is the difference between the expectation of the customer in terms of what they've been told and the reality of the product experience once they get on board.
That's interesting. So you're saying it's, they create this expectation in sales and marketing, the customer's ready for, immense value to take place, but, the product isn't quite there. And you mentioned in the beginning that, it's something that the product team should be thinking about from the beginning. And so how does that value-based approach from the product team change the narrative?
Yeah, you know, some folks who are really kind of doing this well, it comes down to really having the match, an effective offer market fit. You might think about product market fit, but I've used the term offer market fit so that we kind of expand our mindset a little bit more from the, you know, the technical aspect of the product and think more holistically, right? What is it going to take for the customer to realize, and I'm going to use this term repeatedly, tangible value, as in measurable value, mm-hmm. and realize the outcome that they want to achieve through the use of the product. Now, it may be a combination of product and services, or we like to think of whole product, right? Or complete offers, which is the combination of products, you know, technology, services, data analytics, all advised by the journey that the customer is going to embark on. And that's tangible and measurable, right? So if you take those elements and you think sort of a little bit more broadly, understand the journey the customer's on and actually make it tangible. But it starts with that understanding, right? There's the whole process of discovery. What understanding the customer's business, understanding the business processes involved, and then mapping the offering to help them kind of move more effectively and frictionlessly towards the outcome that they're after.
Laura, in the book, you talk about climbing the value ladder. Define what you mean by that.
So climbing the value ladder, again, is a concept of, you know, moving from purely delivering bits and bytes, you know, pieces of technology, but really understanding partially what I kind of had said previously, but I'll say it in a different way. So, mm-hmm. you know, you've got what technologies are going to enable the customer, going to contribute to the customer realizing value. That's sort of mm-hmm. step one, right? What roles within the customer's environment are going to need to engage with the product, right? What practices is the customer going to have to get involved in day in and day out in order to, you know, move them towards their outcome? How do you measure that? How's the customer going to measure that? What do we mean by outcomes? And what do we mean by the value contribution? What's your value contribution towards achieving those outcomes or helping the customer realize those outcomes? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, also having a deep understanding of what are the financial results that will come from the customer realizing that tangible value and ultimately realizing their business outcomes. And what indeed are those business outcomes at the end of the day. So the further up you go on each of those layers, we're climbing the value ladder, right? And helping the customer climb that value ladder. And of course, there's the business lens for that, as in the product management and business lens, and then there's the customer lens, because both might look at it a little differently, but understanding the impact not only for the customer, but also the impact for the business, right? Because depending on how, you know, say what services might need to be provided to help the customer realize their outcome in addition to products, you know, there may be costs associated with that, costs to the customer. Or there may be costs associated, maybe if you want to throw it in because you realize, oh, I'm going to need to provide services in order for the customer to, you know, achieve these milestones, whatever. Maybe you're throwing that into the offer, but you have a cost associated with that. And that may impact profitability. So there's both the customer side and the business side. Does that help explain the notion of the value ladder?
Totally.
It does. And it's interesting, you know, how you approach it. You know, we're talking about from the perspective of a product leader. We've seen a lot of organizations leave the responsibility for value messaging or value proposition to sales teams, to the marketing teams. And, you know, we always say it's an organizational challenge or it's an organizational responsibility.
Absolutely.
The whole company really should be on board, you know. So how does this look when the product team is taking responsibility and how it plays out throughout the different channels of sales and marketing?
Yeah, well, I'll start answer that by saying, you know, we're seeing kind of trends where the product management, the CPO, right, or the product management leader mm-hmm. is really kind of a proxy for the business as a whole. And to that extent, what I mean by that is, again, at the end of the day, most companies exist to sell their product, right, and help the customers realize value. If you don't have a product team, that's a problem. And we've seen that in some small companies. But anyway, when you have a product team and it is a proxy for business success, that is even more amplified when you have a recurring model, right? Because you've got to just do it over and over and over. You've got to set the operational engine of the company up in a way so that it's really driving that business. At the end of the day, then, that the trend we're seeing is that more SaaS companies are centrally modeled with the CPO reporting directly. Traditional software companies that, you know, are shifting to as a service a little less so. We seeing product embedded in engineering, you know, or reporting up through engineering. And then hardware companies are moving in the right to the right as well, but even more of them reporting into engineering. So I think to your question, April, about what are we seeing? Where the companies are wiring themselves operationally to think about the recurring model and value realization from the recurring model, we're seeing more and more product leaders report centrally to a CEO or to a business unit, GM, and what have you. And then everything sort of revolving around that. I think, you know, many, many companies still have, you know, the value management office, you know, in sales. Mm-hmm. And that's in my, you know, in an extreme case, perhaps a symptom of the value gap. If you have to have a whole team of people working on the value, you know, selling the value in a way that isn't sort of self-evident, then that's a challenge. What we see in many companies, I won't say many, it's still a minority practice, but the trend is in this direction, where you're seeing the shift of the notion of value shifting from sales through marketing and into product, right? Where teams are really, really actively thinking about that from the very, very beginning. You know, in fact, in the book, I make the case that if you really want to put the accelerator on this as an industry, perhaps we should do something crazy like or radical, like rename product management to value management. Because at the end of the day, unless we're creating value, the customer's realizing value on a recurring basis, we don't have a growth business, right? And that's the job of product management, is to create value and grow the business ultimately with a strategy that's scalable. And so in order to, you know, kind of hit the nail hard on the head, you almost have to do something crazy like that. Although I can't see companies doing that. I think the term product management is quite fine, but you get the point. And I think companies that are doing this well have very tight alignment between product management, marketing, and sales, right? Mm-hmm. Because the whole land process of landing a new customer is pretty critical. They have very tight and formalized handshakes with customer success, because the process of renewing and expanding and growing is now paramount. I mean, 80% of the revenue comes after that first sale, right? So the old days of the elephant hunters and, right, and then there's just a nice support, highly profitable support contract are gone. So those relationships are pretty critical. But it does put some pressure on product management, who traditionally have been very small teams relative to the size of sales and customer success. So operationalizing those relationships in a way that and bringing data to bear on all of it becomes very, very key. So the ones that are doing, who are being successful at that, are taking that organizational approach.
Yeah. Laura, that's near and dear to my heart, because I got into value and became the ROI guy from a product role. I had a product line that I was managing. I was introducing new solutions to market, and we had a good marketing team, but they were very much at that time, very public relations, brand driven. Today, that's been replaced with kind of marketing or operations driven. So we see a lot of organizations that have a product marketing kind of gap that isn't being filled by product and isn't being filled by marketing sometimes. And then same thing on the sales side, where you've got sales enablement that's very much in the training and the education and the content, kind of find the content side. And then you have sales, which is very process driven around maybe medic or something else. And again, we have a gap. And I think that part of how I got into this was I recognized that gap within my own organization. We were a relatively small company in the storage management space. And I was like, if I don't fill this, if I don't make it to where sellers know how to discover the pains within the buyer and quantify those into what the actual impact's going to be, and then sell to solving that impact and what's the tangible business value that was going to be delivered, my product didn't stand a chance. And so it was almost out of a necessity that I wound up getting into this, because I recognized mm-hmm. that there was this gap. But we find so often that that gap does exist within the organizations, where today many startups, there's great marketing operations people, but they don't have great product marketers that they're adding early enough, and or the sellers are being left on their own to kind of figure out what the value is, how to do the discovery, and how to connect the dots. Talk a little bit to that.
You hit on a really big problem, right? So what do people do when there's information gaps? They fill it with assumptions and, make stuff up. And, you know, if you are, right, that's the truth of it. Yeah. And if you, you know, when you see sales folks, if they don't understand the true value, and they haven't been given the tools and the information to be able to really articulate that in a consistent way across the sales team, right, you're going to end up with customers where the expectations are misaligned, and you're really potentially setting them up for disappointment and then dissatisfaction, mm-hmm. right? And so that's really, really a big problem. I'm sure you have too, right? Seen companies where the salesperson went out and set a series of expectations that is a little different from reality, and then chucks it over the fence to customer success, who then goes, OMG, what the heck is going on here? This customer has this bad expectation or poor expectation of what we can actually deliver. And then downstream from there, then you start getting the feature requests piling in because the customer, you know, was sold a bill of goods, so to speak, but the product is not perhaps, and the offering is not meeting their expectations. So now they start making requests of the internal teams to take the product in the direction that they originally thought they should, you know, and the functionality they thought they should have. And then that becomes a massive distraction. If you're trying to build a business at scale, you can't be catering to one-off requests. You're going to have to do the groundwork to determine if there's a critical mass, there's going to be ROI for what you're putting in the roadmap, just for obvious reasons. So there's all sorts of downstream problems. It's not just an initial thing, particularly in a recurring revenue business, that you may end up having churn is associated with that, which is going to kill your ARR, et cetera. So that's, those are a couple of the symptoms, but it's problematic for sure.
Yeah, such good points. You know, if there's a gap created, then it will reveal itself in the field with the customers, which will then be revealed in the post-sales process, which then comes back to the product and engineering team to be such more burden, as you mentioned, with the feature requests and trying to satisfy a value proposition maybe that wasn't accurate.
Yep. And maybe they can, and maybe they make the decision they can't do the features because it's a one-off for one customer, mm-hmm. which is the kiss of death. I think the other thing that happens with sales is unless the internal teams are very, very clear about the value that's being, that has been created, right? The value that's being delivered. There's an alignment of value between what was created and what the customer expects. Mm-hmm. It's tangible, as in you've got metrics that you can, we should do an example, right? You got metrics that you can measure. That takes sort of the guesswork out of it. If you don't have some of those things and the customer doesn't understand how what they're looking at or what they're about to buy is going to help them realize value, or there's a gap there in their minds, now you're going to get in, now they're going to start discounting, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to say, well, I don't know, and I'm not sure. And so, you know, what kind of discounts can you give me? Well, I'm not, you know, if you think about it, they're not buying a widget. They should be buying something that is really going to move the needle on their business. But if the salesperson doesn't truly understand that and hasn't been provided with the right messaging, the right tools, the right tangible measures to make the case to the customer, then discounting is the gift that keeps on giving, and not in a good way in a recurring revenue model. Because we all know it's just impossible to put the price up after the fact.
Yeah.
Right. So now you've materially potentially cut into the revenue stream and the profitability profile of the business. So there's some very real and tangible and material impacts of that gap.
Yeah. From a tangible standpoint, we kind of look at cost avoidance. So can you maybe consolidate legacy systems down? Productivity is another big one. We're working with a compliance management company, and you know, there's compliance tasks that have to be done for every single application in the business. Each one of those takes 2 to 6 to 8 weeks to complete, and a huge workload across the organization that can ultimately save. When you talk about pricing, many product leaders are struggling with it right now. From a software as a service standpoint, there's recurring revenue fatigue that's occurring. And we know that asking for discounts and pushing back on pricing is a big issue. Talk about this trend towards perhaps value-based pricing as a model, and what you like about that, and what maybe some of the issues are.
You know, I have I'm picky on terminology. So for me, there's a difference between value-based pricing and value-aligned pricing. Mm. And outcome-based pricing, right? So all of these things have a little bit of a different nuance to them. So let me just define that a little bit, because we all talk about want the customer to achieve their business outcomes. Mm-hmm. Well, if you do outcome-based pricing, as in you get paid when the customer realizes their business outcome, for a business that may be fraught with a lot of risk, just simply because there's a lot of behaviors or practices that the customer may have to do in order to realize that their outcome while they're using your product or technology, your offer. And so most companies step back from that. In fact, that's kind of in a way that has become a rare practice, as far as I've seen, based on the research certainly in the technology space. Value-based pricing has tended to be what I've seen and observed is the perception of value, right? So I want to not just create a, you know, commodity price, but I think this is worth this much to you. So I think that's what the value that I'm bringing to the table. And it's kind of subjective a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. And I might put a price tag on that. If I look at value aligned pricing, that to me is more of, I understand what you value. I'm going to contribute to that. And by the way, I'm going to measure it. Mm-hmm. So the value proposition I'm bringing to the table is aligned with the value that you expect to get towards the business outcome that you're after. I've used the simplest example that I've used. I use it over and over just because it's so simple. Is HubSpot. Are you familiar with HubSpot?
Oh, yeah. We use it.
Yeah. Right. So the marketing as a service, and they're more than that, but they kind of started their roots in marketing as a service. They've done a really nice job of aligning their value proposition and their value aligned pricing for the customers. So it's a good example. So what does the customer want? If I'm a marketing executive, I want to build the largest contact database from my marketing campaigns that are prospects for my sales team, right? That's at the end of the day, that's what I want to do from my marketing campaigns. So if I buy a platform like HubSpot, and I know many others out there are using similar models, HubSpot understands that I'm trying to amass the largest number of contacts from my marketing campaigns. Mm-hmm. So they have aligned their pricing to exactly that. Mm-hmm. So they have a baseline number of users, you know, on the platform, just to basically do, you know, cost baseline. But ultimately, they also add an element there, which is the size of the contact database, mm-hmm. right? So that means that as this database is growing, which is what the customer wants, then I get paid, which is a perfect alignment of value, right? And also the other aspect that's beautiful about this is now it becomes very, very clear to the internal teams what metric needs to get driven northward. Mm-hmm. Everybody can align on it. The customer success people can align on that. The services people can deliver services to train campaign managers or even provide some professional services for them if they need it. And the product team to put a feature on the roadmap, if someone has a proposal for a feature request on the roadmap, question number one, how does this feature contribute to driving that value metric north? Mm-hmm. And product managers need to be able to answer that question effectively and in a data-driven way, et cetera. So it starts to become very, very clear, you know, what value is, what the customer values, and then how to orchestrate things internally with a focus on that value metric. So value aligned pricing is the key, and tangible value, as in measurable, at the end of the day, is really the key.
Laura, I loved how you used HubSpot as the example. I got the honor of working with Yamini Rangan, the current CEO at HubSpot, at Workday, and we worked on their value program. She was one of the major drivers of that. So she definitely has a value-focused mindset throughout. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. And there are many other examples in other industries, but I think it's always the easy, pretty easy one for folks to wrap their head around.
Absolutely. So insightful, Laura. What is the one piece of advice you'd like to leave the Enterprise Value Collective with today?
April, could you repeat that, please?
Sure. What's the one piece of advice you'd like to leave the Enterprise Value Collective with today?
I think probably on the point that I was on, which is really having all teams align on value, but I would, in terms of that value lifecycle and shifting left as far left into the value creation process as possible, right? So baking it into the discovery process around customer outcomes per segment, and maybe very different in different segments. Mm-hmm. And aligning on the value that's being created, and ultimately aligning the pricing to that, because that is going to, at the end of the day, become the most predictable way that you're going to grow a recurring revenue business. And I would say think holistically about the complete offer, right? The combination of technology, services, data analytics that is advised by the journey the customer is on, and that is designed ultimately to deliver that tangible value.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us on the Value Coffee Talk podcast, Laura.
Thanks for having me. It was great being here.
If you haven't done so yet, please sign up for the Enterprise Value Collective, LinkedIn or geniusdrive.com website. Hit the like button on this episode. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe so you can stay up to date on when we issue the latest episodes. And until next time, our Enterprise Value Collective, keep sharing and growing together.